Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Bridget Bergen from the WNYC and Gothamist Newsroom, filling in for Brian, who is off today. The option to buy now and pay later has attracted shoppers since the start of layaway. It used to mean stores would hold the items you want until you pay off the cost of them, usually stretched out over a few payments. Once you completed those payments, you got the things you paid for. Today, you can get a $1,000 sofa in your living room before you finish payments. And yes, the cost is still conveniently spaced out over four payments or so, with the promise of no or minimal interest. And you can use a buy now, pay later with almost anything these days, from groceries and gas to furniture and your morning cup of coffee. But of course, convenience comes with costs if you're not careful. And although it sounds like a form of credit, it's not regulated in the same way. This affects buy now, pay later companies, stores that offer it, and consumers that use it differently. Joining me now to explain the buy now, pay laters of today and what to be aware of when you are using the service is Nikita Agarwal, postdoctoral research fellow at UCLA's School of Law, who has been studying buy now, pay later services. Hi, Nikita. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Bridget. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you, too. What has your experience been? Why did you choose to buy now and pay later? And what did you use it for? What did you buy? Was it a nightmare to return those items if you had to? Call us at 212-433-9692. Maybe you've had to rely on this option to buy now and pay later more lately with the prices of everyday goods going up. Again, that number, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Professor, why use buy now, pay later services? Why not just use a credit card for a big purchase or purchases if you're not ready to pay for it in full?
Yeah, so the main attraction of, and we're talking particularly about these new buy now, pay later products, which are interest free, at least for the sort of short term, so the pay in four period. And the obvious advantage is that you can delay payment at no extra cost, provided that you repay in time. So it's sort of, it seems like a no brainer for a consumer to sort of spread out payments and smooth consumption.
And you made a note there that I think is really important, as long as you pay in time. So Are these pay installments actually interest-free? And is that time the key issue here?
Yeah, so that's the big issue that's causing a lot of concern and has attracted regulatory attention. So most of these products are advertised and they are formally interest-free in the sense that they have no upfront interest, right? So consumers can take out, buy the sofa that you mentioned and spread out the payments over a period of 6 weeks and sort of four equal installments and pay zero interest. So you just pay for the cost of the sofa, but you spread out those payments. However, many of these products carry late payment fees, and that's the catch, if you like, which is that if you do go beyond that period and you don't pay in time, then you could be landed with a late payment fee. And so the real question is, if a consumer is paying a lot of late payment fees, and if they are, then it's really essentially like interest, but they're tricked into believing that they're not going to be paying more.
So, okay, if customers are paying, paying little interest on each of these payments, then how do these companies actually make a profit?
Yeah, so it's a sort of similar to a kind of credit card model where basically these companies are taking a cut of the transaction. So it's like an interchange fee or a transaction fee. And merchants are actually willing to pay quite high fees because buy now, pay later is really increasing their sales volume. So there's sort of a kind of scale effect, right? So they can pay 3 to 6% of the transaction because they're getting more transactions overall. And so it's still profitable for them.
Wow, 6%. That seems huge.
That's sort of like the tip of the iceberg. I think one of the things that's potentially misleading is that you know, you have these large companies like the Affirms and Afterpays of the world that may be able to negotiate these lucrative contracts with large merchants who can pay these fees. And so it might be sustainable for them to run this business model and potentially not rely so much on charging fees. But there are many other outfits, other buy now, pay later companies who just can't, they don't have the power to negotiate those kinds of fee arrangements. And so the concern is that they may need to rely more on fees in order to be profitable.
You raised the sort of comparison to credit cards. I'm wondering, are buy now, pay later services subject to the same rules and regulations as banks? You know, how are shoppers protected or aren't they protected at all?
So formally, there is very little protection for the buy now, later product. So like one thing to sort of bear in mind is that some of the buy now, pay later lenders are also banks, or they may be regulated as entities, but that for these particular products, they're not regulated. And then in other cases, these products are being offered by entities that are not regulated. So there's a distinction between kind of like activities and entities. But with respect to buy now, pay later products, intentionally or not, they have been structured in a way that sort of falls outside some of the key sort of consumer protections, and particularly protections that would apply, obviously, to, you know, credit card transactions and otherwise for credit products that would require disclosure of the cost and give, for example, you know, defenses to the consumer to dispute a transaction. Those things don't apply, and it's primarily because of the way in which the charge has been structured. There's no interest, but there are late payment fees. And because of that, and because of the four installment structure, it falls outside one of the key sort of regulatory frameworks. In other cases, there are laws that should technically apply to this as a form of credit, but there's ambiguity because they're sort of being pitched as payment services. And I think this has created some uncertainty as to sort of which laws do apply. And I said at the outset, sort of formally, they don't apply. Buy now, pay later companies will tell you that, well, we might not be required to carry out affordability checks or to disclose various things, but we do that anyway. And actually, we do it better because we use better data than the credit reference agency. So there's a kind of sort of gap between what the industry perceives as going on and I think what regulators perceive as going on.
I want to bring one of our callers in, Warren from Brooklyn, who I think may have some experience with a type of buy now, pay later system, Warren, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I just the other day was going through my credit card statement and looking at some summer purchases, and without even asking, my credit card prompted me to say, hey, do you want to spread out the payments for this purchase? So I took advantage of it. I read all the fine print. It said, no fee, no interest, and you can pay over 18 months. So I said, sure, I'll take that option and keep my money for another day.
And just to be clear, Nikita, is this the same type of model that you're talking about?
So it's interesting to me because you mentioned, Warren, I think a repayment over 18 months, which at zero interest, which is sort of unusual. We're typically looking at a 6-week period for most of these sort of interest-free buy now, pay later products. Is that right? Did I hear you correctly? 18 months?
Yeah, they gave an option to do 6 months, 12 months, or 18 months. It was on the first time that you use this plan. I think the next time that if I wanted to spread out a payment, it might charge me a fee or a little bit of interest. I'm not sure, but I'll definitely use the introductory offer.
And Warren, you said this was in connection to a credit card that you had, correct?
That's right. I have a Chase credit card. And again, I wasn't even looking to spread out the payment. I was just looking at my credit card statement and they had the offer for anything over $100. They just said you can make it on the sort of payment plan if you wanted to.
That's interesting. And so, Professor, would that be possibly, you know, how credit cards are responding to these types of services by offering, you know, similarly structured payment plans, but, you know, that are part of a payment system that, you know, either a consumer already has or is maybe more familiar with?
Yeah, I mean, not knowing much about this particular product, it sort of strikes me as a sort of effort by credit card companies to compete and sort of reclaim market share and potentially sort of attract consumers with introductory offers that don't necessarily persist beyond that. So maybe, you know, the first time you use it, this is what you get. But there's obviously a concern amongst those of us who care about consumer protection that that consumers could then be sort of lured into a longer time transaction where you end up having to pay interest or paying or consuming more than you actually can afford.
Are there specific kinds of changes that you think would make buying now and paying later, both financially safer for maybe the shoppers and more sustainable for some of these larger buy now, pay later companies?
Yeah, I think particularly on the sort of consumer side, one of the problems, in my view, with buy now, pay later, one of the bigger problems is the sort of the digital experience and the fact that because a lot of this is happening online and these payment services, these buy now, pay later options are so seamlessly integrated into merchants' websites, it's just become far too easy to take on debt. And so I think that a large part of the response needs to be targeted. So the sort of regulatory response needs to focus on the kind of digital consumer choice architecture, right? Like making it harder for consumers to just, choose the buy now, pay later option and say, well, we'll buy this because we don't need to pay, we only need to pay a fraction of the price today. So it seems very cheap, right? So that's going to be one part of it. Like, how do we change the default settings and how do we encourage consumers to sort of through their online experience to make more prudent financial decisions? And then the other side is sort of what the lenders need to be doing. And I think a large part of that is carrying out sort of more robust affordability checks. We don't really know what they are doing and they aren't doing, but certainly the regulation requiring them doesn't really apply to many buy now, pay later products, at least these short ones that are notionally interest-free. And to the extent they don't need to carry out affordability checks, obviously the concern is that people are taking on credit that they can't afford. And, the Feds recently included buy now, pay later for the first time in their survey of household economics. And it found that of the, I think it was 10% of the some 10,000 survey respondents who had used buy now, pay later in the last year, and this data was collected in end of 2021, 50%, over 50% said that they were using buy now, pay later to buy something that they would not otherwise have been able to afford. Now that's a very concerning. That's a very concerning response.
And that percent speaks to the volume of people who are using this option. But do we have any sense of, the average amount of debt that an individual consumer or a family might be going into using these types of these different types of plans?
I don't have those figures off the top of my head, but there's also sort of it's probably difficult to estimate, but the concern about people buying things that they can't afford obviously suggests that there is a risk of over indebtedness as a result of buy now, pay later. But in terms of the actual quantum of that debt, I wouldn't be able to sort of tell you that.
Listeners, we want to hear from you about your experience with buy now and pay later. What did you use it to buy? Have you had any trouble when you were trying to return something if you used that type of system? Call us at 212-433-9692. Maybe you've had to rely on this option because of the cost of everyday goods, and maybe you've tried a couple of different platforms. And maybe you're buying now and paying later using a couple of different systems. Or maybe you figured out the hack to make the most of this type of plan. We want to hear all of those stories. Again, the number 212-433-9692. If you're just joining us, I'm Bridget Bergen from the WNYC and Gothamist Newsroom, filling in for Brian today. Our guest is Nikita Agarwal, postdoctoral research fellow at UCLA's School of Law. You recently spoke to buy now, pay later industry leaders. Who is leading in this sector and what did you hear from them?
Yeah, so we had a sort of off the record roundtable sometime earlier this year with representatives of the industry, including Afterpay and Affirm. And, these are sort of amongst the large these are amongst the leaders, including, in addition, Klarna, which is another big company in this space. Sezzle, and I believe Zip is another one. And I think those are the companies that have been targeted by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in their market monitoring inquiry, which was launched in December. So they've asked these firms to provide more information.
And I'm wondering to what extent, changing shopping trends have affected these companies. Buy now, pay later is almost a decade old. Are shoppers using it today in a different way than perhaps, say before the pandemic?
Yeah, so this is, it's not a coincidence that we've seen a kind of explosion in buy now, pay later during the period of the pandemic, right? So people are at home and e-commerce spikes. And so it's not a coincidence that these things are very much connected. And sort of more broadly, the fact that, buy now, pay later is now integrated into e-commerce as opposed to being sort of a bricks and mortar option, again, affects, as I said before, the ease with which consumers can take out credit, can borrow using these services. So certainly the sort of move towards more online retail, the pandemic where people were shopping much more at home as a result, and sort of, I guess, the increasing sophistication of merchant websites, the ability to sort of integrate these payment options so that you just have to click once and you can kind of secure whatever, that sofa that you really wanted very easily, have all contributed towards, I think, this trend.
Interesting. I want to go to one of our callers, Lisa in Chicago. Lisa, thanks so much for listening, and tell us about your experience with Buy Now, Pay Later.
Hi. I just want to call in and say that I use it pretty regularly. I tend to use Afterpay, and I think I've used Affirm once or twice. And I haven't had any issues with, I haven't run into any issues with like missing a payment and having to pay more in interest or anything like that. But I will say that I am buying a lot more stuff than I would if I had to pay for it all at once. So that's something I
Interesting.
need to keep in mind.
And Lisa, would you say that you're using it? Are we talking like big ticket purchases? Did you just move and buy a new couch? Or, is this how you are managing your budget? Are you using it for groceries or new clothes? What is the way that you're using it?
I'm using it for like things like new clothes and household goods that I probably don't need but really want. So if like a sweat if a sweatshirt is like a few hundred dollars, if I were just going to pay it up front, I might say, no, I really don't need to do that. But if I can break it into four payments, I kind of do the calculations in my head and I decide, okay, yeah, I can buy that shirt.
So interesting. Lisa, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for calling. Please call us again. Let's go to Gloria in Westchester. Gloria, welcome to WNYC. You have a slightly different experience, it sounds like, with Buy Now, Pay Later.
Yes, I do. My experience has been I was an Affirm addict, like in the very beginning. And just like you guys were talking about, I tended to, in the beginning, I bought things that like I just really wanted and like, maybe I'll pay for it. I would always tell myself, just buy it now. And then when you get paid, you'll pay off the whole thing. And then it started snowballing because of course the way that Affirm breaks down your payments, like sometimes it's four payments, but most of the time, like you can choose to pay it over a year. So you'll have like payments that are as low as $12. And when you get into the cycle of buying everything that way, like I ended up spending about $250 a week. I racked up $10,000 with Affirm that I didn't even realize I had racked up because
Wow.
everything I was buying now and paying later. And some of it were things I would buy in the store, but most of it were things that I would not buy if I had to pay a lump sum. And so it does sneak up on you. I have now paid down my $10,000 Affirm debt to like $3,500. And once I pay it off, I am absolutely done with buy now, pay later.
Ooh, I Thank you for that story, Gloria, and congratulations on paying down your debt. I hope you got some stuff that was valuable to you and that you've enjoyed as a result of it, even if it meant having some of that debt sneak up on you. Thank you for calling. Please call us again. I want to go to Brandy in Harlem, who has a different take on buy now, pay later. Brandy, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you. I really love the show. I'm so sad he's on a break, but I'm sure he needs it. As far as me, I've used Klarna for some time now, and I've bought things that I really need that I could not afford at that time. And thankfully, it's worked out with me with not having to miss a payment. So I haven't seen all those scary things where interest racks up, but it has worked out for me. But I wanted to know why so many financial people see this as such a detrimental thing. Like, it has worked well for me, so I'm just really want to understand why I should stop using it. There is one thing I did want to add. It does snowball, so I have to really like pull back and say, all right, this is it for this month. Don't get anything else on this stupid app, and you know, go save some money. So I understand where folks may feel like it's scary, because it can be if you don't have that self, what's the word I'm looking for?
Discipline.
Control. But mm-hmm. otherwise, for things that I can't, like, I do need great shoes for my feet, and they're almost like $300. So I'll buy like one at a time so that I could use them and still pay them off and not be out of $300 at once. So that's all I had to say. I love the show. I'm always tuning in.
Well, Brandy, thank you so much for listening. And thank you for sharing your experience with the service. I feel like you both asked your question and answered it. But Nikita, how would you respond to some of what you heard from those callers?
I mean, it's really just so interesting for me to hear your experiences and also the diversity of experiences. I think it pretty much confirms, you know, what we've been saying and what the concerns are, right? Sort of, it's sort of, you know, double-edged sword. We have consumers like Brandy and Lisa who have self-control and they're able to repay on time. And for them, it's great, because why pay now when you can pay later, right? That's clearly the whole point. But then you have consumers like Gloria, who is experiencing exactly the concerns the problems, or the harms rather, that we're concerned about, which is that, you know, as she says, she was an Affirm addict, racked up debt, didn't kind of keep control of it, and snowballed and sneaks up on you. All of these things are really just like alarm bells in my mind, because for consumers like Gloria, you know, it's resulting in too much debt, and that's not something that she wants. It's undesirable. Even if she thought she wanted it at the moment she bought the item, she didn't want to end up with $10,000 of debt, right? Like 2 or 3 months down the line. And so it's consumers like Gloria who are trying to protect. We need to protect consumers like her by, you know, ensuring that it's not so easy to get into it, by ensuring that you have a better awareness of how much you're taking on. And, you know, whether that means making it harder to click through to the buy now, pay later option, or, you know, removing autopay once you're done with a particular transaction, or whatever it is, there are various solutions that we can think of. But it's people like Gloria who we're concerned about and who we need to protect with the law.
Sure. And it sounded like Brandy also was raising how that could be an issue. The very right. issue that Gloria laid out there was something that, you know, she described. If, you know, you can get into that cycle, those great shoes are expensive. Let's talk to Paul in Montclair, New Jersey, who has an experience with what sounds like a medical version of buy now, pay later. Paul, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks. Yeah, that's exactly right. So I got some dental work done, just like a routine visit, and I hadn't gone since before the pandemic. So like, I just had a couple things going on and they were telling me how much it was going to be. And then I said, man, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. And they basically offered me this plan. It's called Care Credit. So far it's been great, but basically you do a procedure and then they give you, let me see here. So I took out like $10,000 within a year they'll charge me no interest to pay it off in 1 year. But as soon as I go over that and it's not paid, then every month it's pretty close to like, it's like 26.99% interest rate.
Oof.
So, yeah.
Well, thank Paul, I hope your mouth is feeling better. But that's a really interesting, it sounds like a different model of a buy now, pay later. Professor, have you looked at some of those models as well?
Yeah, so this is an example of just the regular, kind of the older version of buy now, pay later. So it's not the interest-free short-term credit product that we are mostly talking about. This is the older version, which is longer term, and that it does carry interest. And it should be subject to the sort of regular affordability checks and various protections that are generally applied to credit products. And so, of course, the interest rate is high, but at the same time, it is a product that does fall under more traditional credit laws.
Hmm. We're going to take one more caller, Mary Beth in Westchester. Mary Beth has a slightly different take for us to think about as we are thinking about how to buy more stuff. Mary Beth, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you so much. So my take is completely, it's almost off the wall, but I'm cleaning out my mother's house right now, and it's hell. It is absolute hell. It's decades worth of accumulation. And I guess my point is, think twice before buying anything and accumulating stuff. I think things like buy now, except for what the last caller was talking about, I can see the reasoning in that. But it feeds this addiction we seem to have to accumulating stuff. I mean, you wouldn't believe the stuff I'm finding in cabinets. It's sick. It's really sick. If you want your children to love you forever, leave them an empty house. This need to accumulate has a multi-generational cost, and not just in money. I'm a big fan of the buy nothing groups. Go on Facebook, you find the buy nothing group, and you may find what you're looking for. And in doing so, you're helping someone else. So that's basically what I had. I mean, we need to break this addiction to accumulating.
Mary Beth, I wish you the best of luck in your project of cleaning out your mother's house. I know how hard that work can be, just the physical act of it, but also, you know, the mental and the psychic strain it can put going through so much stuff. And so another kind of piece of advice for this consumer segment, just before we go, Professor Agarwal, what can we expect for the future of buy now, pay later? How do you think things will change?
Yeah, I think, you know, we probably will expect some more regulation. I should say that, you know, we've been focusing on what's happening at the federal level, but the states have been doing more in some ways to address. So California, where I'm currently based, has been regulating buy now, pay later for a little while now under the sort of California financing laws. And so states have moved a bit further. And at the federal level, I mean, the CFPB is going to come out with a report, I believe, in the fall. And I wouldn't be surprised if they recommend sort of tighter regulation, because they're very, very concerned about developments. They're also concerned about something we haven't talked about, which is the entry of big techs into this space. Apple, for example, recently launched its own competitor called Apple Pay Later, I believe. And that's concerning because it's in addition to all of these things we've been talking about, you know, there's concerns about competition, there's concerns about sort of data and privacy that are exacerbated when you have these large data-rich companies entering the space. So in short, I'd expect more regulation and also just more information and sort of analysis in the short term as people become both interested and more concerned about this growing sector.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Our guest has been Nikita Agarwal, postdoctoral research fellow at UCLA's School of Law. This has been so interesting. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Bridget.